Okay, friends, welcome back. Glad to have you on board this Monday night. We have a very busy week ahead. I hope a lot of you will pay close attention and try to spread the word where people want to hear it. If people don't want to hear it, don't ruin your friendships. Just, you have to redraw the boundaries physically and literally and in terms of friendship. But it's time. We have to do this. Shedding is getting worse. We have every indication to believe that. We can't prove it empirically, scientifically, but we think that shedding in the environment is now building up with spike proteins and mRNA to the extent that you do not want to touch a shopping cart, a door handle, a doorknob, on anything outside of your own home. And if you have a lot of people visiting you, you want to be washing those things off occasionally with an alcohol wipe or whatever. Shedding is getting worse, okay? You can take that to the bank. All right, partner, are you there?
I'm here, Jeff. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Here's a story going up tonight. Dick Allgaier just sent it over. Shocking trove of Health and Human Services records reveal the most aggressive vaccine propaganda campaign ever. It involved and used screenwriters, Hollywood, comedians, church leaders, black doctors, and influencers in social media, and they were all paid to pimp the vax. This was an overwhelming steamroller on the average person who stares at the flat screen for information. Just, they didn't have a chance. So we understand now why we're looking at a probable 80% who have taken the shot. The other 20% now are at grave risk, and we are doing our best to try to give them the armament they need to protect themselves, because we've got to save some of us if this goes where we think it's going to go. Now, we don't know what's going to happen in 1 or 2 years or 2 years and 3 months, which is the Deagle.com projected deadline, January 1, Happy New Year, 2025. We don't know, but it's looking by the day more and more like the Deagle projections are going to come in very close to where they stand right now. And that's all I can say at this point. We don't have the exact mechanics down, but we do know that there is a method of transmission that involves direct contact that is leaving people with all kinds of illnesses, and some of those people are listening right now tonight. We could start with Bell's palsy if you want. Why don't you go ahead and start with that, Erica?
Yeah, so Bell's palsy is a partial paralysis of the muscles in the face, which results in, you know, some portion of the face drooping from the mouth to the eye. Yeah, you had it. And I think there's some consensus now that it is a reactivation of a herpes simplex virus. And but we're seeing more and more of it. And it, you know, it usually happens. These herpes viruses tend to reactivate at times of stress or some other immune challenge. And we're seeing more and more of it with the vax, and now with people being exposed, unvaxxed people being exposed to people who have had the vax. So we've got a little bit of a conversation here from one of the groups questioning it.
Let me say one other thing. For those of you out there who have not had Bell's palsy, you may have had pre-symptoms. It may not have resulted in a paralysis of your face. But if you ever get a severe pain behind, let's say, either earlobe on the side of your skull, right where the hairline is behind your ear in that area, that's the C3 nerve that feeds your face from your brain. And that's where I got mine, and others have described similar. It's along that nerve pathway, and that nerve goes ultimately up to the muscle and musculature of your face. And if that nerve is damaged, and I was unfortunate, I had severe damage to it, your face just hangs. It's toast. Now, people who are not vaxxed are getting this, but it's not necessarily zoster, but we do think zoster is included in this transmission of herpes
viruses. Well, it appears to be some form of immune suppression that's happening. Now, these herpes viruses are kept in check by specifically CD8 cells. These are CTLs, cytotoxic T lymphocytes. And these appear to be either deficient or somehow compromised in certainly people who have gotten the vax, but now it looks like the same deficiency is being transmitted to the unvaxxed in some fashion.
Question, partner. Question. Mm. What causes, and this has happened to me a couple times, I never had a full relapse, but I get that pain in that nerve behind my ear. And it happens invariably on the rare occasion that I've been under tremendous stress over the years. What is it about stress that is depleting something in your system that allows this stuff to crawl out of its little encapsulated hideouts and wreak havoc in your neurology? Do we know exactly how it works, how that works?
I'm not sure, but I would guess that cortisol has something to do with it. When cortisol levels go high, and that's a reaction to stress, then that suppresses the immune system to some extent. Right. And, yeah, you become susceptible to a variety of infections.
That's not the only thing. That's correct. I just noticed that it's only happened to me a few times, and it's simplex. It's one. Simplex one. And it's definitely stress-related. I'm just wondering if there's something in these shots that are causing a profile of stress, like normal stress, that is triggering the outbreak of herpes simplex 1 and 2. I don't know. Just a question.
Well, I'm almost convinced that they're either the spike protein itself is interacting with components of the immune system, like the toll-like receptors that are responsible for surveilling foreign nucleic acids and keeping viruses in check, keeping cancers in check. The spike protein interferes with that, and I suspect they're putting other proteins or coding for other proteins in these shots so that the transfection is successful.
Right.
But these same components are obviously being shed in some form, either the mRNA or truncated mRNA, or the spike protein itself, or the proteins themselves, and they're ending up in the unvaxxed and causing just no end of misery.
Okay,
the same immune suppression.
Right, okay, go ahead and do your reader. These are unvaxxed people. Please keep this in mind, and they have no apparent prior history of Bell's or anything like Bell's, or maybe even herpes simplex 1 or 2 anywhere else in the body, because it can break out other places. Usually people get them around their mouth. We call them cold sores sometimes. Very unpleasant, very painful. I know people who have had it. And they can get it genitally as well. That's another area. So it breaks out. Go ahead, read that list. That's a good one. The Bell's palsy thing. Yeah.
Has anyone gotten Bell's palsy from vax shedding? And here's an answer. My husband just got over that. He's not vaxxed and mysteriously had Bell's. He was around a bunch of vaccinated guys. The first one says, thank you for responding. My daughter has it, and she is not vaccinated, so I was trying to see if maybe that might be a factor. And the first one says, I know without a doubt my husband is not vaxxed. He was at a flea market with a few guys and mysteriously woke up on a Sunday with Bell's palsy. It took about 5 weeks to recover from it. Unfortunately, we had to seek medical attention for it. I'm sorry your daughter's going through this.
Mm-hmm.
And the original poster says, she did have to go in for treatment also. She works around kids that are getting boosted. I'm so glad your husband recovered. We pray that her face will return to normal in some time.
Key word there is boosted. Let us remind you, the new boosters now. The old boosters were removed from the shelves about 3-4 weeks ago in round numbers. And the new one has been put in its place. It's a bivalent booster, which contains the original COVID booster, and now there's an Omicron booster with it. And with the Omicron booster, that is configured to have its own mRNA and spike protein potential, which we have nothing to offer you about. We haven't identified anything from it, but It's not going to be a duplicate of the first one. They're doing something different with it. People are dropping dead after getting this new bivalent booster. Tell us a little bit about that. We're seeing stories, too.
Yeah, I think we read some on Friday.
We did.
Yeah, people that are sensitive to the shedding seem to be extra sensitive around people who are getting this latest booster. Now, I don't know if they've reached a critical point in their sensitivity to it, or if these people are, in fact, shedding quite a bit more or something different. I'm listening to these 911 calls now fairly regularly, and
you're addicted.
Well, it's kind of like a soap opera. You can't wait to
totally
see what happens
is.
Next.
Oh, I know.
I mean, today there was a 27-year-old female that fell down and began having a seizure. There was a 14-year-old that was fainting at the local school.
You told me there were several others, 40s and 50s, having trouble earlier.
Yeah, I think on Friday it was just they were all seemed to be people in their 50s having issues.
Yes.
And the one that sticks out of my mind is the person that collapsed outside of Walgreens.
What did he or she do while they were in Walgreens?
Could they have gotten a booster? And that's I have read some reports of that in these groups that people aren't even getting to their car. They go into the pharmacy, they get the shot, they wait the requisite time to see if they're going to pass out. And then they get up and leave, and before they get to the car, they're on the ground.
Remember, these are super boosters, and people are not being given information for informed consent purposes.
No.
They're just being jabbed with this new double booster. And, yeah, they're overcome. We don't know what's in the Omicron half of this bivalent shot. We're watching. All we do know so far is that people are falling over. Down.
Yeah.
Boom.
Well, and I don't know. They're pushing this flu shot now, too, very aggressively. I mean, the advertising for it is nonstop. And they're being given that at the same time as a COVID shot. So there's potential interactions there in one form or another.
Well, think about it. They're getting this new super booster and a flu shot, which is due to be reformulated, if it hasn't already, with mRNA. Man, and we're seeing it already. The stories are just, they're awful. Right in the parking lot. Or in their car.
Again,
some guy died in his car a few weeks ago. I found him dead in his car.
Yeah, that type of thing is happening somewhat regularly. But then, you have to think that a lot of these people, this is shot number 4, 5, or 6 in some
crazy,
cases.
Crazy. All right, let's wrap up our intro and remarks and bring on Nurse Ann here in just a couple of minutes. We do want to make it quite clear that if any of you go near a hospital, for God's sakes, do not allow them to transfuse you. Don't do it. Well, first of all, don't go near a hospital. Most hospitals are treating the dying, and the people doing the treating are dying themselves. Think about it. They all had to get shot up. And fully vaxxed means 5 shots now, or 4 at least.
Yep.
So stay away from there. Don't go there. If you need to go to an immediate care thing, a strip mall, whatever. If you've got to have a suture or something, go there. Don't go to a hospital. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's the truth. And if you get transfused, and I know a woman who said, I need to get a transfusion. My white count is this or that. I said, please don't. Oh, I'm going. I'm with the best people at Cedars-Sinai in L.A., and I'm going down to get transfused. And she got a couple transfusion, and I said to myself, she's got about 6 weeks. I think she died 8 weeks, dead, killed her. The blood is deadly.
Yep.
Capital D, deadly. The blood supply is deadly. Please understand that.
Yep. Many examples of that. We have a short one right now if you want to read that.
Go ahead. Where is it? I don't even know where it is.
Let's see. Hold on.
Transfusions? I got it.
Yes, that's
very
the
short.
One.
All right, it's from Debbie. I know a lady who was not vaxxed and had to go into a local hospital to have a hysterectomy. She had to have a blood transfusion during the procedure and is now having blood clots. Think she might have gotten infected blood? I can see a lawsuit coming. So there you are. Some of these people are waking up, but it's too late for the woman who got the transfusion. She's toast now, in all likelihood. As it comes.
Time will tell. Once that amyloid process starts,
they're not screening for spike or mRNA or anything else. They're not.
No, they're not.
All right.
And they're not excluding vaxxed blood, so...
No. No, vaxxed blood is big money. Remember that. It doesn't matter who gave it. Blood is money. The International Double Cross is making a fortune. Billions a year on this stuff. And they're shipping it all over the world. And it is full of death. Okay. Nurse Anne is back with us. I think most of you by now know who she is. She is an heroic nurse, over 30 years experience, top of her profession. She has not been shot up. She fought through it. She is working in a major New York area hospital and was on last week, I think, early last week, and was telling us some of the things that have been going on. She took some time off, a couple months, to get well because we think she got exposed. She got shed upon in the hospital. But she's okay now and went back to work, which is a mind-boggler to me. She's braver than I am. Hello, Anne. Erica and Jeff are here.
Hello,
Anne.
Erica. Hello, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you both?
We're good. We're good. Nurse Anne has a Russian accent, so you'll have to kind of dig through it there a little. No, she's a sweet Irish lass. And she has a wonderful Irish accent. All right. We could start with transfused blood if you want, just for fun, if you have anything to offer. Are they giving people their full list of rights and choices before they're transfused? Are they trying to give them enough information so they can make a logical decision? Are they telling them that this blood may have spike protein and mRNA in it? Are they doing any of that?
So,
do we know?
Is that if you have surgical procedure, they will describe the surgical procedure to you, and they will basically tell you in advance that there may be a situation where they may have to transfuse blood, but they're not going to tell you if it's from a vaccinated person or if it's free of spike protein. The bottom line is basically you're signing on that same consent form to have the surgery and have the transfusion of the blood.
And the blood is all mixed together, as we know, and separated into various components. There's just no way it can be pure anymore. It can't happen. Not with 80% of the people in this country shot up, and they're giving blood, lots of them. So the blood supply, in my humble estimation, is almost a death sentence, and I do know one woman who was killed by it. No question. None.
Yeah. I would concur that the blood is complete. You don't know who now is giving you blood, but you could fairly well guess that it's probably coming from a vaccinated person. As long as
how many different people
that particular type of blood.
Yes, and how many different type of the blood? How many different people have donated to one unit of blood for a transfusion? We don't know. It could be dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds. It's mixed.
Yeah.
It's all mixed. So there's just no way.
The only thing that eliminates you from transfusing blood is if you have a positive HIV blood test. Everything
right.
Else is open season.
Got it. Okay. All right. What would you like to talk about this week that has been going on since we last talked?
So the big issues the majority of the patients that I had encountered this week, all but one was vaccinated.
Wow.
But one.
Did they happily tell you this, or did you just see it on their charts?
I saw it on their charts. Every one of the charts have all the updated records of who is vaccinated, when, and how many vaccinations they've received.
Wow. I don't imagine you spend a lot of time.
Five and six now.
Five and six. And the new booster we know is the bivalent, so they're maybe getting, it might be worth one and a half. I don't know. When you go into a room with someone whose chart says five shots, three, you know, the original two, and then three boosters, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts in your mind? I don't suppose you want to hang around in that room very much.
No. I'm going in, and I'm using PPE gear, and I'm double masking.
Good.
Because I don't want to take the chance of inhaling anything. And I'm also double gloved. So I'm going in. Everything I touch in the room, it's in the room with the patient. When I'm about to leave, I'll take that first set of gloves off, and then I'll leave the other ones on, and then I'll close the door with the second pair of gloves that I still have on, and then I take them off outside of the room, and then I like wash my hands like crazy.
So do you have staff that goes around and takes some kind of a wipe, an alcohol wipe, and does doorknobs or door handles?
Oh, no, no, no. That would be asking for miracles. No. they'll clean the rooms, but the exterior
but they won't
of the
touch
rooms,
the transmission.
Railings and all of that. Yeah, no, that's not clean.
Those are the key transmission points. I remember a study. They had an outbreak in a hospital of something that was being spread, and they couldn't figure out how it was being spread. Patients were picking it up, and they finally figured it out. Do you remember? I told this story once before.
Yeah.
It was the pen on the charts at the patient's foot of their beds. The pens were crawling with bacteria and things. The pens.
Yeah.
No one thought about it.
Now it's the computer keys. Everything's documented on the computer keys. Everybody's just so nonchalant about it, but everybody's vexed for the most part, except for the one patient I encountered that wasn't vexed. But then that person is encountering nurses that are vexed.
And the nurses
and
are breathing,
they're
touching him, they're breathing on him, and
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we've seen the people, like, I talked to one patient recently, a relatively young fella. His wife was in the room with him. He's a nice enough guy, but she was saying that how things had changed for her, and one of the problems was that he had multiple problems with multiple clots. So he was coming back, getting treated for almost the same issue for the third time. But also, he had been vaxxed three times already. And she was saying, she goes, he's getting more frustrated and more angry and more upset because of what's happening. Now, I don't discount that. But I followed up by asking her, I go, well, how's his behavior? How is he towards you and his friends? Because he wouldn't necessarily be angry with you guys. He would be angry with the medical system, but he was not necessarily with you guys, with you and his friends. And she goes, no, everybody. He's upset with everybody. He's upset with the world right now. So it's completely changed his behavior.
We have heard this too many times. And personalities changing for the worst. Aggression, hostility.
Very aggressive.
Darkness.
They're very aggressive.
Yeah. Wow.
And then we had the little lady. I mean, I didn't take care of this lady, but there was a holy commotion in the unit. And she was in her 70s, and she was all of 4 foot and 90 pounds, and she'd been vaxxed four times. And on her chart, there was a recommendation that she should have her fifth vaccine. So
of course.
She hadn't had yet received the fifth, but she'd received four.
What were her complaints to bring her into the hospital, Ann?
So she was having problems. The daughter said she was having problems with headaches. And so they brought her in, they did a CT, they saw something on the CT, possible blood clot, maybe tumor. So she was on the unit with the idea for prepping her for surgery and taking her for surgery to see what was going on with that.
Brain surgery?
Yeah.
Brain surgery? Ouch.
Yep. So she's looking at a craniotomy.
Gosh,
and they were having, at that point, the surgical general surgery had to consult with neurology and the neurosurgical team because they had to see if it was a safe approach and see if the surgery could be done without causing more problems. But she's already in her 70s. And now I will give it to her. The lady was very strong. And the reason I say this is because she started acting out. And she was insisting on leaving the unit. She got all her clothes and got dressed and was insisting on leaving the unit. And she walked out in the hallways and was walking into other patients' rooms. And she had a one-to-one sitter basically watching her. And the sitter could not control her. And the sitter was towering over this little lady. And then they had to call the security. And by the time security showed up, she was already halfway down the corridor and she was leaving the hospital and she was basically letting everybody know she'd had enough. But she wasn't in her right mind. She could not actually make that decision to leave. And there was an element of confusion there and huge behavioral. She was lashing out. She was hitting people. And finally...
Hitting people. She was striking people.
Striking the staff, yeah. And fast. She could have been a boxer because her reflexes were amazing. You know, she didn't miss once. She got everybody. And then four security guards show up because we have to page overhead. And the four security guards come up and before you know it, they're like, you know, trying to convince her to get back to her room. She wasn't listening to them. So she barges into one of the rooms where I'm in, and there's a male patient in there, and she's not listening to anybody. So I asked him to back off a little bit, and then I said, listen, I will try to see if I can take you home. Let's go and see where you live. I need to go up and look at your chart and see where you live so I can drive you home in my car. Because there was no reasoning with this woman. She was insistent on going home. But she could not make that. That wasn't a decision she could make for herself. So we walk up the hallway, and there is myself. I'm standing beside her. We're walking up. There's the sitter behind her, behind us. There's two nurses behind her desk, and then there's four security guards. Like it's a big parade, you know. We're this little old lady who's 90 pounds, you know. And so we get up to the desk, and just when we have her somewhat calm. The nurse comes out and says, what are you doing in your out of your room? You're not supposed to be. And it all starts. She blows up. She is absolutely irritated. And she starts hitting and kicking. And then before you know it, the four security guards have her grabbed. And she's every limb. There was two on her holding her arms. And there's two holding her legs. And then there's two nurses holding her legs. And she's squirming and kicking. And she's. Now she's gotten the profanity has come out, everything. And she's given it all she's got. And she turns around and she wiggles around and bites one of the security guards on the elbows. And then he says, okay, I'm done being nice now. And they take her and they put her in the bed, in her room. And now she is given Haldol and Ativan to basically take her down. And it just took
her
down for about the best part of 2 hours.
Big time trank. They knocked her out. Did she get the restraints in bed too?
Yeah, the restraints and 4-point restraints on a 90 pound little old lady.
Wow.
Gee.
Yeah. But the superpower strength that came through was unreal. It reminded me of that scenario I used to see when I was out in California a few years back. And there was big problems with that drug called Flocka, if you remember. It was almost like bath salts that people were inhaling, and then all of a sudden it was driving them out of their minds crazy. And they used to think they could fly, you know, and they would like jump off of balconies and ram cars with their heads and stuff. And it was just kind of like that kind of behavior where they could not make sensible decisions whatsoever. So it was just consuming her thought process.
Okay. Now, a question. Let me back away from that very bizarre little story. The average rank-and-file employee in a hospital now, how would you describe them vis-a-vis their behavior 3-4 years ago? Have they changed? Now, remember, all these people are basically vaxxed because one-third said no, and they walked out of the hospital world, and the two-thirds remaining who are running the show are all vaxxed, multiple shots. We don't know how many. So what change in attitude and demeanor are you seeing among these vaxxed nurses and doctors and whatever else?
Well, 3 or 4 years ago, I would have said there would have been a good collaboration with nurses and doctors. And mm-hmm. you would have had great communication, and there would have been people where you would have seen them smiling, and they would have been kind of joking around. I'm not at the patient's expense, let's be clear on this. But, I mean, they would have been, it wouldn't have been a hostile environment. Fast forward 3 or 4 years into this scenario now where we're post-COVID, so to speak, and now all the staff for them pretty much are vaccinated unless they're working for agencies that would allow you to medical exemption or the religious exemption. The nurses who are vaxxed are exceptionally distant. There's a huge lack of empathy. They're in the wrong profession now because they don't have that empathy.
This is interesting.
Cold.
You're almost suggesting they're almost acting like zombies, just going through the motions. They're just
going through the motions.
Soulless.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a coldness that you feel between each of them with their peers, and equally so with the patients. And the patients feel it. And they say it. And there was the one guy I talked about that was his behavior had changed towards his family and the medical establishment. He was the one guy who actually, when I went back the second night, he goes, "Oh, thank God you're here." You know, like, you know, he was so glad to see me. You know, he was saying that he had a nurse all day that he couldn't relate to at all. Now, this is a man who actually was vaxxed, but still could identify a warm person as opposed to a cold person. A person who actually cared and
gone.
A person who was distant. Yeah.
Their empathy is gone. I have one question, then I want Erica to jump in here. This raises an issue in my mind, and I don't want to jump into the paranormal, but there seems to be something in these shots that is changing people's personalities. I don't think that can be disputed. We've had too many reports of that. Do you think that this is a permanent change in their personality, or are they just somehow running out of patience? And I mean the kind that you use around patients, just kindness.
Right.
What do you think might be causing this? What's your best guess?
Well, I would say the nurses who were vaxxed through ice and have boosters, it's pretty permanent for them. The nurses who fought hard to not have to get it and they got the minimum requirement, they still have some hope and they still have, you know, some happiness. And there's one that's not on the unit I'm working on, but she's on another unit and we still have fun and we talk and so, but her hand was forced to take the vax because her husband was laid off, and she had two children to take care of. And she fought very hard, and she didn't win this battle. So she took the one shot, the Johnson & Johnson shot, and that was that. But but the ones who have taken multiple shots and are boosted up, yeah, their personalities are changed for, it looks like, for forever, because they were warm and sweet at one time, and now they're short. It doesn't take a lot to get them pissed off, and they're just not the same people, and it's just the way it is. I see it with all the nurses I used to work with.
Erica, we've run across many accounts of this kind of
thing. Yeah, many. I don't know. It's probably a whole constellation of different things. I mean, their energy levels are depleted. I don't think their mitochondria is generating energy. Their brains are probably inflamed. I mean, we know this stuff gets into the brain and will cause inflammation just by virtue of being there, never mind whatever other action it's having. Their neurotransmitters are probably not at ideal levels, so they're going to have mood disorders. I mean, they're toxified. They probably feel crummy, and then realizing that they've made a big mistake and there's no going back.
And they're angry about that, too. Yeah, they're injured, and they're hiding it so they can keep working, some of them. This is really awful.
And then there was another woman. I did take care of another woman, and she was mellow. She was actually quite mellow, but she was only 64, and she looked a lot older. I couldn't believe it. Like, she looked 20 years older. And she came in, and because she had dizziness, had fallen, and she didn't hit her head, but she was having huge abdominal problems. And she apparently, I looked at her chart, and had been vaxxed on March of 2021, and then a follow-up vax, this is Moderna, she follow-up vax on 3/29/21, and then again on December 22/21, Moderna, and then on September 29th of this year, she had Pfizer. And then on 10/4, she has this lightheadedness, she falls, she didn't hit her head, she has huge abdominal problems, she was having huge issues with not being able to eat, nausea, vomiting. Her immune system got really weakened to the point where when she finally made it to the hospital, she now was anemic, and also she had now got C. diff.
Mm.
And in between all of this, she tells me, between March and December of 2021, she was having problems with her eyesight, and then she was finally told in January that she was now legally blind to both her eyes. And I said to her, I said, could you see before this? Like, could you actually see? Could you see the TV? Could you read? Could you order from a menu? And she said, yes. But after December of 2021, which was her last Moderna vaccine, she ended up being diagnosed in January of that following year, 2022, being legally blind.
Well, we know the spike loves neurology, whether it gets in. We think it's possibly the cause of tinnitus. It gets into the audio nerve. Maybe it's getting into the ocular nerve in her eyes. It can go anywhere and cause irreparable damage. It's just possible. And what about the blood? Now, a lot of people just don't believe that people can have black blood. I would say it's hard to believe that they might have black blood and still be able to walk and talk because there's no red in it, i.e. there's no oxygen. So what's the latest on that? You told a very alarming story last time about trying to run it literally down to the lab. And by the time you got there, it had already sludged up to the extent that it was not usable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ran into this problem. Anyone who's vexed, I'm just going to tell you right now, it's dark black blood. It's black blood. And the more they get vexed, the more difficult it is to draw blood off of a vein. Even when they have a central catheter, which would go into their heart, or a PICC line that goes up the arm and into the heart also, you still have a hard time drawing blood from that line. You still have to flush it like crazy. You're flushing with saline, you're flushing it with heparin, it has to be heparinized. It's nearly impossible. And once they start clotting, the line ends up getting pulled, and then you got to get new lines in again. It opens the patients up for more infection. And it's a constant revolving door with the issue of the blood being clotting all the time. So I ran into this situation because I had to run a complete blood count where we were watching somebody's hemoglobin levels and hematocrit levels. And they were worried about what they came in with a nasty, nasty wound in their foot. And they came from a nursing home, and this is disgusting. I'm about to tell you this, but it is revolting and disgusting. But they came in from a nursing home, and there was maggots in the wound.
Oh, gosh.
So that in and of itself was wounds with foul smelling. Was revolting. And so, anyway, she had very bad infection, and we were running the complete blood count on her to check her white blood cell counts, her hemoglobin, her hematocrit, and then they wanted to see about her dead rate and a couple of other things. Well, I had to get two individual tubes, and she was impossible to get, but I finally did get them, and that it was black from the minute it hit the tube.
Did it come out black or turn black it hit the tube? It came out black.
Came out black. It flows into the tube, and it's slow as well, which the slower it runs, the more possibilities of a clotting even before you can get an adequate amount of blood. So I did finally get it, though. I finally did get enough blood to go and take it to the lab. So I ran it down to the lab. It's right now around change of shift. And I get a call from the lab when I'm in the middle of giving report to the day shift nurse. And they said, you're going to have to redraw that blood. That blood was clotted. And we're going to need another sample. And I said, well, I'll let the day shift nurse know because my shift is now finished. I spent over an hour in that room trying to get blood from that poor person.
Over an hour.
Are
the clots blood clots or are they amyloid fibril clots? Are you able to tell?
You couldn't tell. You would never be able to tell the difference. Not to the naked eye.
Not in a black medium like that. No.
Mm-hmm.
Erica, go ahead.
But one thing you can tell is that if it starts clotting, it clots really quickly and it gets really thick. Like when you're trying to shake the tube, you'll see it. You'll see the clot moving.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that happen. I'm like, they're not going to accept this blood. Blood's already clotted.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, there's additives in them tubes.
Yes.
Yeah, and you
understood.
Said the majority of these people are on anticoagulant therapy anyway, right?
Every single last one of them are on. Every person is on anticoagulation therapy. Be it heparin or Lovenox, or they may have a combination of heparin, Lovenox, aspirin, Plavix, you name it. They're giving them it all, and it's not making a difference anymore.
Wow.
Well, that would suggest amyloid clots.
Amyloid clots, I know. And nobody's talking about that, so just so you know. And we don't see the doctors. I'll end up at nighttime when I have a problem calling them on the phone. And I'll be very lucky if a physician will come up and see the patient. And unless I emphasize the need for them to come up, they're not coming up. And this lady that I'm talking about here, this 64-year-old lady that looked like she was 84, this lady came in with a blood pressure of 68 over 43. She shouldn't have even been on the surgical unit. She should have been in the ICU unit, the medical ICU unit. So she had multiple complications, for starters. So we have this massive wound. She was diagnosed with C. diff. She was clotting like crazy, and we have a blood pressure that's in the toilet. And now it was saying it was also messing up her heart rhythm. And ultimately, she did go to the ICU, as it turns out, the medical ICU, because this wasn't an appropriate admission for the surgical floor. But why they did it is because of the wound, because they planned on taking her to surgery to clean out the wound.
Yeah. What are the typical... Well, the blood markers that you're seeing in terms of hemoglobin, is the ferritin very high?
The iron levels are off the chain, too. Yes, the iron levels are, like, high numbers I hadn't seen previously are very, they're very high now. Actually, and I will tell you one other thing, they have stopped doing the D-dimers. They won't even do the D-dimers anymore.
And I wonder why.
They're just, and that's a very sensitive test. I've told you many times about this, but for me, it was a red flag that something was wrong for me. And I knew something was wrong, but the blood test confirmed it. And right. My D-dimer was off, it was in the 3,000. The normal D-dimer is 50 or below. So there was no reason for someone like myself to be reading high levels of a D-dimer in the thousands when I wasn't even vaxxed.
Well, that was one of the characteristics, one of the features of the, the infection, the actual viral infection. And then, of course, you know, if it resolves, you're fine. You're on the road to recovery. Mm-hmm. But these people who have been vaxxed, I mean, if they're consistently just perpetually producing spike protein, there's no end to it. And the blood, I think, it's getting destroyed, you know, from the clotting itself, the normal blood clotting, if you want to call it normal. But then these amyloid clots are forming at the same time.
Yeah. And then thereafter, in the surgical ICU, you're getting hammered with transfusions. And you're not just getting one transfusion. If your hemoglobin levels are low that you need a transfusion, you're getting two, maybe two or three.
You're toast. You're done.
Yeah.
That you're not going to make it. All right, last quick question. Is there a general sense among the staff, I'm not going to say doctors at this point, among the nursing staff, about people coming in there who have been vaxxed, and the simple fact that you are facing a far more complex, not only diagnosis, but treatment protocol for whatever it is that they're dealing with. This is really bad. Oh, I think we lost Ann. Yeah, we
No,
did.
I'm here.
Are
I
you
think
there?
You lost
oh,
Erica,
we lost
actually.
Erica. Okay. Well, we'll get Erica right back. So that question, is there any awareness in there of what these people are coming in with, the complexity of the horror that they've gotten from the vaxxed?
The nurses I'm working with are not asking the right questions. They're not asking the right questions. They're not even talking amongst themselves anymore about it. There was a time when...
Really? They're just putting in time.
No, there was a time when when you would have been on a unit and nurses would have talked about it. They don't talk about it anymore. And I think it's afraid because it's punitive. They're afraid they're going to get fired. It's almost like...
fear,
it's,
what a nice motivation for a professional, fear.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez. All right, we are just about out of time. Erica, final question for Ann this time around.
No, it's disturbing. It's you know, obviously, I don't think they're being appropriately treated. They're not being given the things that actually might help.
No. But, and they're not looking at the alternative medicines at all. It's all pharmaceutical.
No, you know, as you've said before, the vitamin C, to try to get that, you know, restore the redox potential of the hemoglobin, the heme. You know, there's so much more that could be done that would likely help these people more so than the treatments they're getting.
Well, and not to mention the fact that they could actually treat them with something that's a natural substance like the natokinase over an anticoagulant pharmaceutical drug like Eliquis or, you know, Coumadin or heparin.
Right.
Well, see, here's the thing. There's money on them because there's a lot of money in those drugs.
Yep.
And thank you
again. If you're on Coumadin, you're required to get a whole load of labs outside of that to monitor those levels. So again, more money has been generated because you're basically mandated to follow up with all those, doing those labs and stuff like that. So it's a vicious cycle. It really is a vicious cycle.
Right.
All right. So all of you who are contemplating hospital or you have an issue that scares you and you dial 911, that's the general environment you're going to be entering. So keep that in mind. Wow. And thank you very much for sharing that. You are the voice from the inside, and it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, and your patients are very lucky to have you as a nurse. Very lucky.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Keep up the good work. Stay safe.
I actually do, like, enjoy helping patients where I can.
I know.
But
I know.
I don't know if I can save them. I used to be able to go in and say, who can I save tonight? But I don't know if I can say that anymore.
Yeah, just make them comfortable.
Well, you're a wonderful human being, and you are the best embodiment of a professional nurse, which is so much more than just a nurse, psychologist, confessor, all kinds of things. Keep it up, and we'll talk to you soon. Be careful. I'm glad you're PPEing it like you are. That's great.
Thank you again, and I wish you the best of luck. Talk to you again.
Okay.
Thanks, Ann.
Good night, Ann.
Good night.
Wow. It's like hearing a double-barrel shotgun go off. Boom, boom.
Yep.
It's not a good place to be, a hospital. Not anymore.
No, it must be just utterly chaotic.
And, well, she said
it's exhausting.
The nurses don't care anymore. They don't even talk about their patients or their work much. They don't care.
And I wonder how much of it is just, you know, that this there's no gratification. I mean, you feel gratified when you know you're saving somebody, but what are they really saving them, or are they just buying them time?
I think it's a time-buying exercise. I think you're right. Okay. All right. Thank you, young lady. I'll talk very soon.
Okay, Jeff.
And, great job, as always.
Okay, my pleasure. Good night, everyone.
Okay. And we will be right back with Hour 3 coming up next.